We don't talk much about social class in Australia. In fact, we pride ourselves on the idea of a fair go, no matter who you are or where you're from. But is that the reality? Findings from Diversity Council Australia research show that if you come from a background of social disadvantage, you're less likely to get promoted or offered career development opportunities. And yet, most leaders don't even see class as an issue in Australia. In a moment, you'll hear from someone who had to change the way he spoke to climb the career ladder. But I'd like to start by unpacking the issue with Catherine Hunter, who is CEO of Diversity Council Australia. Catherine, what have the findings shown?
Really, it's very much that class is a powerful but hidden barrier that definitely shapes people's opportunities at work. And our early data shows a persistent class ceiling that you referred to, which can limit career opportunities for workers who are marginalised by their social class. Some of the early findings show that only 44% of class marginalised workers were offered career development opportunities in the past year. And that's compared with 76% of class privileged workers. And only 22% of class marginalised workers feel valued and respected in their team. So that really brings in the human element. We're nearly half the rate of workers who are privileged by their social class do feel valued at 41%. So what this means is unless organisations acknowledge and act on class, they're really leaving talent behind.
What do we mean when we say class? Because I think if you ask almost anyone, they'll say they're middle class. Everyone thinks they're middle class.
Yeah, that's true.
And we don't have aristocracy in Australia. So what do we mean in Australia when we say class?
So we actually use a self-identified scale, which is the MacArthur scale of subjective social status. And class refers to a person's social standing compared to other people in Australia. And it's very much based on factors such as their wealth, their income, education, occupation, their access to social capital, which is their connections, their networks, and also even their hobbies and leisure activities. And all of these factors combine to determine a person's status or power and their position. And so that's what we refer to as social standing or social class.
So it's not just money?
No, absolutely not. In fact, we often hear about socioeconomic status or SES, and I guess that's just a very sort of narrow way. And of course, that can change for people over time. So class and the broader sort of social and cultural aspects that we consider actually give us a much bigger and a bit clearer picture that also of the systems, because it's really systems change that we're always looking to address as well.
This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking about class in Australia. Catherine Hunter is the CEO of Diversity Council Australia, who's done recent research showing that there is a class ceiling in Australia. The idea that you could be disadvantaged at work if you come from a particular background, even though we like to think of ourselves as being egalitarian. Dr. Angelo Capuano is a law lecturer with Central Queensland University and has kind of experienced this firsthand. Angelo, your entry into the legal world came with some barriers. What did that look like for you?
Good morning, Tegan. Thanks for having me. So, yeah, early on in my career, I was shocked to experience a number of barriers when trying to enter the legal profession. One example comes to mind. So I received a call after applying for a job with a law firm, and the call was to reject me from that position. But the reason provided to me was that the successful applicant had a share portfolio, which showed that they had commercial acumen. But of course, being in my early 20s, I couldn't afford a share portfolio. So that was a bit of a wake-up call to the realities of classism in the workplace.
That is wild to me, because this is obviously a very early, like, entry-level position. And that's one of the unspoken criteria, I guess.
Absolutely. And a share portfolio of wealth, as was foreshadowed earlier, is a classic proxy for class status.
So that was one example. There's been others that you encountered sort of once you did get into a law firm.
Yeah, absolutely. So I managed to successfully get a job as a seasonal clerk in a law firm. Again, this is in my early 20s. And one of our activities was to map our networks, particularly our social networks that could benefit the law firm and result with clients. Needless to say, I didn't get the job, but that was another example of what might be measuring social class in prospective employees to determine their fit.
Yeah, Catherine, that's really an example of that social capital you were speaking about before.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Angela, I'm sorry to hear that was your experience, but look, it's sadly not an uncommon one. And I think, you know, you mentioned that there's things such as unpaid internships. You know, if you can't afford to actually work for free for a period of time because you're from a class marginalised group, then it's another barrier for you to participating in the workforce.
Angelo, you had a similar experience. You really kind of had to change the way you spoke.
Yeah, so coming from the western suburbs of Melbourne, there's a particular accent you acquire growing up, and you become increasingly conscious of that, particularly the grammar, so the grammatical characteristics that you acquire. There was a need to actively work on that and try and refine that over time to avoid the negative implications of your accent.
So it's not just your own experience you're drawing on here. You also have written a book about class and social background discrimination. So it's something you're quite active in, Angelo. What would you like to see change in Australia?
Yeah, so I think from my research, my current research, and also what I've written in my book, the issues around class discrimination are being turbocharged by algorithms and AI and increasingly becoming overt. So it's really difficult to identify instances of class discrimination. So there's situations where employers might use social media to vet applicants, cultural fit. But one issue with cultural fit is that often it aligns with a person's background, signals with a person's background. AI video interviews as well might disadvantage people from working class backgrounds based on the way they speak, their communication style, or the use of non-verbal cues. Referring back to the covert nature of class discrimination, there's also algorithms used by employers to try and find diamonds in the rough, to try and increase representation in the workplace from people from working class backgrounds. But the issue with this is that the algorithm might seem like a good idea on paper, but it might have the opposite effect in practice. So think of it as a really bad Band-Aid. Mm-hmm. And the algorithm measures disadvantaged background, but really it relies on unreliable indicators of disadvantage, and it misses the private important ones. And the danger in this is that it can filter out the true battlers, those who experience true disadvantage. So what I'd like to see in Australia is particularly tackling the issues that arise around AI, the use of AI, and also the use of algorithms in employment, because I just want to reiterate, we're seeing class discrimination become a lot more hidden and a lot more covert.
Catherine, how does what Angelo's saying there with the algorithms and AI being part of this picture now, just to make it even more complicated, yeah, how does that play into the research that you've done?
Look, we haven't particularly looked at AI within this research, but we have done some research on some of the concerns around AI in recruitment. So I think they're reflecting a lot of the things that Angelo mentioned. So we're certainly very mindful that AI can unfortunately bake in bias, because typically it's still relying upon historical data, and we all know that there's biases in the historical data already. So there really needs to be, I think, more education around the use, the ethical and responsible use of AI, and something that the teams and organisations really need training on, so that they're aware of the dangers of AI and in terms of baking in that bias.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Catherine Hunter, who's the CEO of Diversity Council Australia, and Dr. Angelo Capuano, who's a law lecturer at Central Queensland University, about class in Australia, something that we pretend isn't a thing, but the research done by Diversity Council Australia is showing that, yes, it is. It's holding people back in the workplace. So how do we tackle it? Greg says, after working on Wall Street for 10 years, I returned to Melbourne to work on a big bank trading desk. The first question my new colleagues asked me was what private school I went to. I went to a government school and I was over 50 at the time. I faced class bias my whole working life. It's real, and one reason I moved to the US. My first experience, says someone else, in privilege playing out was applying for housing. I heard and saw some other applicants and knew that I'd be viewed as a more favourable applicant, and I was. So, Catherine, do we need to just stop pretending in Australia that we're classless?
Look, I think we do. There's certainly something in the national psyche that likes to think that we're a classless society, but it's just not the case. And, you know, at the moment, you just have to look at the fact that we're experiencing a 20-year high in wealth inequality, such that it prompted an economic reform roundtable. So it does matter. It does exist. And the first step in creating change is to actually acknowledge it and to be aware of it in workplaces, but especially to understand that it does create additional barriers for people from class marginalised backgrounds.
Angelo, you spoke before about the role of AI and algorithms in recruiting. There's also other overseas models that you've looked at. What do you think could work in Australia?
Yeah, so just drawing on what Catherine said, I think addressing the egalitarian myth in Australia is really important to just identify that, yes, we do have a class-based society, we do have class barriers, and we do have social inequality. I mean, we see it every day walking through Melbourne, people experiencing homelessness. We have a broken childcare system. We have a huge divide between public and private schools. So, yeah, definitely class barriers exist. So I think that's the first hurdle. But we can learn a lot from the UK, and I think the UK's leading the charge in this area, given that it's had historically quite a defined class structure. So you got aristocracy, the royal family, it's a clearly defined class structure. Whereas in Australia, people might think that, no, we don't have a class structure, but we do. And the reality is it's a lot more fluid. So what I'd like to see is us borrowing a lot of ideas from the UK, particularly around borrowing an organisation similar to the Social Mobility Commission, which can help in researching the problem, particularly from an Australian perspective, but not as just a problem, researching solutions to the problem, how we can implement social policy, which is tailored for Australia. And that can hopefully lead to other benefits like changed culture and policy within employers.
So, Catherine, how could employers do this? What would you like to see here?
I think the very first step, as I mentioned, is to be class aware. We're seeing some great examples, actually. And Angelo, I'm sure you're across some of the efforts within the legal profession to really look at the ASHRS has developed a social mobility and inclusion network. And that really is an opportunity to look at sponsoring and mentoring people from class marginalised backgrounds. So by being aware and understanding the barriers, we're starting to see leaders in some professions really step up and start to act look at initiatives that will try and remove those barriers by at least being aware of them in the first place. And that active sponsorship and mentorship is something that people can do. And of course, collecting data so that people actually understand the full extent of the challenge within their workplace as well.
Catherine, Angelo, thank you both so much for joining me today. Catherine Hunter is CEO of Diversity Council Australia. You also heard from Dr. Angelo Capuano, a law lecturer at Central Queensland University who faced social class barriers early in his career.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.